Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app. Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
Can you sing with that voice?
Literally. I did Daddy Warbucks in middle school, and it was talk singing.
What I'm telling you, I'm telling you something.
Why sing?
That's singing.
On 95.7 The Game.
Something like that. Say hi to Grandy, everybody. He's in for Dibs. Happy New Year to each and every one of you. We say it now because we want to duck back out of here and show back up in 2025 after this game tonight. Warriors and Cavs, Niners and Lions. Warriors in action with Warriors Live right around the corner. In fact, less than 2 hours away. We're going to hand it over to E-Dog. Evan Giddings will take it over. It's all presented by Xfinity Stream Sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. And this is the kickoff show presented by Habeas Law. You've been wrong. Habeas Law will fight to make it right. Call 1-800-INJURED or visit HabeasLaw.com. We're talking it out live here in Santa Clara, and our man on the Niner beat here at 95.7 The Game is Jake Hutchinson. And good time to talk it out because it's going to be another interesting offseason ahead. Jake, how are you, man? What's going on?
Hey, I'm good, fellas. I'm good. It's unfortunate that this game really means nothing, but, yep. You know, sometimes that happens in life.
Yeah, it's relaxing, though. I'll tell you that. We're going to go in there and have a good time tonight. There's food, there's drink, and, you know, just like people are all looking at their fantasy apps and all of that stuff, it's much more relaxing.
Yeah, you get to watch some fourth-string offensive linemen. It's everybody's dream.
I mean, okay, fine. You just made it serious now with that. Like, should Brock Purdy be playing behind this line? What's your take?
Yeah, he should. I think at this point, this is the last game. I would expect, I mean, maybe they play him in week 18, but this is the last game you get a real chance. And for one reason alone, I think it's worth it. The Lions play so much man coverage, and that's been the one thing that has just really destroyed the Niners schematically this season. I think if there's any team that you want to line up against going forward, you want to get these reps against the Detroit Lions. And if you can do anything, if you can move the ball on offense against the Lions, I know their defense is decimated, but if you can, you know, attack that scheme that has troubled you all season long with some pretty bad offensive linemen, I think that bodes pretty well going forward and at least gives you information even if it doesn't go well.
Jake, you're talking about the offensive line and some fourth stringers and some names that I'm sure a lot of us haven't even heard of. I know you, though, describe yourself as a sicko, so you know all of these guys. Tell us who should we be keeping an eye out for on the offensive line, because there's, again, going to be a lot of guys that most of us haven't even heard of. Who do you have your eyes on tonight?
So even as a sicko, I won't pretend that I've watched Austin Pleasant's tape, and it appears that he is not a creative player, but a real NFL player who is now starting at left tackle, from what we can tell. And if he goes out or they rotate, it'll be a man named Charlie Heck. So that's not exactly a more believable name. But that guy, I think Charlie Heck, was with the Houston Texans. Nick Zickel, I think, is probably going to be their left guard. He went to Fordham. He is best known for being Brock Purdy's roommate. He's kind of ridden his coattails a little bit there. So those guys don't really have me excited. I think if Drake Nugent, a guy they bumped up on the practice squad, he went to Michigan. He's been a guy that we've talked about as a potential, you know, center option moving forward. If he gets any time tonight, I'd have my eyes on him.
Jake Hutchinson with us here on Witherden Dibs 95.7 The Game, getting ready for Lions and Niners. Jake, I made the comment a handful of minutes ago that with regard to Brock Purdy and his future, I think that all of us are having a conversation that the Niners aren't. Like, I just don't feel like they're debating it the way we are. So, to the best of your ability, warn 49er fans what to be ready for this offseason. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, they're going to extend him, and it's going to be a number that's going to make some people vomit. And if they don't vomit, they're going to be a little nauseous, or some people are going to say, I don't care. And so that's just what the number is going to be. But the real number that Brock Purdy's going to make is probably going to be closer to Jordan Love. And if you look at Jordan Love's contract, it's not really, you know, what is it? I think $55 million a year.
Right.
It's really, he's getting more like $35 million a year for the first 4 years. That's kind of how it breaks down on the cap. And then his fifth year is something like $75 million. And the way it works in the league is once you get to that number, unless you're the Dallas Cowboys who are going to pay Dak Prescott like $80 million next year on the salary cap, they're not exactly doing well. If you're not them, what you do is you restructure that money and you extend it. So instead of having $70 million hit your cap, you rework it and you keep pushing it down the line and you keep kicking the can because the salary cap keeps going up. And I know this isn't a sexy topic, but the reality is Brock Purdy's actual money, the 49ers are going to have to face for probably the first four-ish years of the deal. It's going to be more like a, you know, 40-ish, 35 to 40-ish million sort of guaranteed, maybe a little higher than that, depending on, you know, how the market looks. But it's really going to be more like that number, which I think if that was the number people were hearing, it would scare you a lot less if you're saying, okay, Brock Purdy's a $40 million quarterback, not a $65 million quarterback.
Jake, I think I'm going to generalize a bit, but speak for Niner fans. I think some of the concern when you're paying Brock Purdy, however much money it is, you know, near top of the line quarterback money, it is, well, can you fix everything else that's wrong with the roster? I mean, we just got done talking about Austin Pleasance and Nick Zakel and other offensive linemen, and I know this is a unique situation because of all the injuries, but how would you respond to a Niner fan who says, I'm just not comfortable paying Brock that much money because there's holes everywhere else, and if they do that, are they able to fix the roster elsewhere? How would you answer that?
Well, I'm not sure they can fix the roster. I mean, they're going to have a hard time fixing the roster as it is, but that's not because of Brock Purdy. Like, the reality is you have to look at Brock Purdy on his own, and Brock Purdy is a young, ideally, I think you would still think, ascending quarterback who's been faced on a team with a lot of injuries, a team that has not answered schematic challenges very well. And he hasn't played at his best, but he's also, you know, made plays. Is Brock Purdy a top five quarterback? Is he Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes? Of course not. But is he an above average young quarterback with the potential to get better and still be good for, say, 5 years down the line? Absolutely. The rest of the guys that you've paid, where you got Trent Williams and George Kittle's been steady and Fred Warner's been steady, but you also paid Javon Hargrave like $20 million a year. You've had Deebo Samuel hitting your cap. You've got a lot of these veteran aging guys, and they're taking up a lot of cap space. And so that, I think, is where the money is coming from, and that's where you get limited. I still think with the way the NFL salary cap keeps going up and sort of the maneuverability you have, you can probably go get, you know, you can make an attempt to go get like Drew Dolman, like a center from the Falcons, who's a guy that they liked, who's a local kid who went to Stanford, and he's like 25 and on the right track. You can make a real opportunity and go after a guy like that, but are you going to be able to take swings at, you know, three or four of those guys in free agency? No, but that's just the reality. That's where the 49ers are in the life cycle of these deals, and the reality is they're going to have to do really well in the draft, where they'll probably have about 10 picks, and that's how they're going to have to rebuild the roster, and that's kind of what the Los Angeles Rams have done.
Jake Hutchinson is with us here on Willard and Dibs talking Niners as we get ready for the last home game of the year. Jake, what does the wide receiver room look like next year?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think the number one is Deebo Samuel a part of it? I could see that going either way. They save a little bit of money if they, you know, post-June 1 him. Post-June 1 is a post-June 1 cut. where you can sort of designate that early and give a guy a chance to go and make a free agency decision. But, you know, I think they're facing sort of a situation where he, you know, they're not saving a ton of money, so he could be on the roster. And I could really see that going either way. I think they should move on from him. It's sort of stagnant with what he brings. He's not a real receiver. From what I've seen, he can run a limited route tree, and he's dynamic with the ball in his hands. But he really doesn't play the position, the modern position of receiver. And the 49ers keep facing man coverage, and he can't beat it. So I could really see that going either way, but I think you've got Brandon Ayuk, you've got Ricky Pearsall. Obviously, we don't know what Ayuk's timeline is going to be. You've got Juwan Jennings, Jacob Cowing, and then, you know, they might either have to go get sort of a mid-tier wide receiver for cheap and or, you know, draft one in sort of the middle later round. I think that's a way that you have to look at it. There's a lot of really talented young receivers in college every single year, and it's worth always, you know, picking one up, especially if you have 10 picks.
Jake, one of the other big questions that I'm sure we're going to be debating for a lot of the offseason is what the Niners do with the trio of free agents on defense. One of them, Mooney Ward, inactive tonight. Another one, Dre Greenlaw, who is going to be shut down for the final two games of the season. And then Talanoa Hufanga, who's missed a lot of time this year but is back and healthy and playing pretty decently now. It feels like the writing kind of on the wall with Mooney Ward because of the extension they handed out to Diamador Lenore. So I would imagine you think he's not on his way back. But specifically about Greenlaw and Hufanga, what do you think their futures are?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they prioritize those deals. Greenlaw coming back and looking great and then having the injuries, I think sets them up in a spot where both sides will probably be able to come to a deal, you know, something where 2 years, I would guess, probably like in the 10 or so, 12 million range. It could be anywhere from, you know, 4 million to 6 or 7 million. I could see that being the deal, and I think that just makes a lot of sense. You saw Greenlaw. He lets them play defense in the run game, and they really can't play run defense without him next to Fred Warner, and that was pretty glaring. I would expect that those two sides find a way to get a deal done this offseason. Hufanga will be interesting, you know, what his price range is. I mean, he was technically an all-pro, and listen, he's a good guy, but he is not a cover safety. He's a guy that can play in the box and is dynamic, and there's no question they missed him this year, given that Jair Brown hasn't been what they want him to be. He's a guy where if I don't know what his market's going to look like. He's a really interesting player, and I think they would want him back if they can do it for cheap, somewhere $4 million or below. $4 million even seems high. But if it's like $3 million, they might get a deal done. He could go either way, but he obviously helps them in the run game, but isn't a complete safety.
Jake, I'm sure in their mind's eye, Christian McCaffrey plays a bunch of games next year. But somebody who can at least somewhat mimic his production, I would think they would want to bolster themselves with some people behind him. Mason is a free agent. Garendo sits here. What does that running back group look like next year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's going to be a pretty competitive market, I would imagine, for Jordan Mason, who's a guy that ran so effectively, and teams in the NFL are copycats, and what you saw this offseason was all of these veteran running backs getting paid and all of them pretty much succeeding in new schemes, and it does feel like there's sort of a resurgence in valuing that running back who has proven himself, and I wonder if they just get priced out of Mason, given that, you know, other teams are probably going to have better opportunities for him and will probably be willing to pay him more. I think Elijah Mitchell, a guy that's just been so injured so always, like, do they just take another one-year flyer and say if he's healthy, you know, he's in this room? I think they're going to probably have to look elsewhere other than Mason because I think other teams might value him more. But they can also, you know, they've been decent at getting undrafted free agents, late-round rookies, and I think that's another option for them to approach that too.
No conversation about the Niners is complete without a question about special teams. So I'm curious what you think about Jake Moody and his future, because it was pretty clear how frustrated Kyle Shanahan was after he missed, a 41-yarder against the Dolphins in Miami, and the way he addressed it post-game, it kind of felt like he was over the whole Jake Moody experiment. But he came back out this week leading up to this game and talked about how he's, still defending and still believes in Jake Moody. Do you think his time in San Francisco is coming to an end, or the Niners are going to go into next season with Jake Moody as their kicker again?
Well, Kyle Shanahan probably has more disdain for special teams than almost any other coach in the NFL. In his mind, he just wants the field goal to be good from wherever, and it's this funny thing of him being an offensive coach who hates special teams and then puts so much faith in all of these kicking, getting a field goal, and then has no interest in really the operation of it. And maybe that's harsh on Kyle, but I think the reality is that he just doesn't like special teams, doesn't enjoy it. The only time they've run a fake his entire time on special teams is when Mitch Wishnowsky just did it on his own, and then it was called back because of penalties. He's not a guy that likes to innovate. He wants special teams to be sound and safe and do its job. And so when it's wrong, he cares so much more about that than when it's right. So for me, I think Jake Moody, I'd be surprised. I'd be pretty shocked, honestly, if they just outright cut him. That doesn't make any sense to me. I think the fact that he had a pretty bad ankle injury and he came back quicker than the initial timeline was expected. And he was productive his rookie year, but obviously it looked shaky. I think what they'll do is maybe consider bringing in a veteran kicker to compete with him, and then you just see how that competition goes. But I would expect, honestly, that Moody is still their kicker next year. He's really good on kickoffs. He was pretty good before the ankle injury. I think you give him an offseason to get back healthy, and we'll see. And maybe they just bring in somebody else that's a veteran. But I think Moody is still their kicker next year, if I had to bet.
Jake, what does Kyle Shanahan need to do differently next year?
I think he needs to take a long break and, maybe not go the Aaron Rodgers route, but have a deep spiritual journey. Maybe go to New Zealand, go to Middle Earth, find himself somewhere and sort of evaluate where his scheme is at. Maybe you bring Bobby Slowick and Mike McDaniel and you all have discussions about how your offenses have struggled and you bro hug it out, but you really need to go into the lab, go somewhere weird and just, take a breather and say, all right, how do I beat man coverage? Is my scheme evolving? Because it has felt stagnant this year. It has felt like in years past, he built on something. They would add emotion that really elevated the offense. And this year it felt like their whole plan was, all right, well, Christian McCaffrey's going to come back and save us. And he didn't. And teams just kept throwing the same game plan at him, and they had no other plan. So I do think Kyle just needs to say, all right, I'm gonna shut football out of my brain for a second, and then I'm going to ask some big questions and just be open to unique solutions, be a little bit more malleable, maybe be more practical. Maybe you get rid of Kyle Juszczyk and you just go with 11 personnel going forward. I don't know. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I think Kyle has to take a look in the mirror and say, what is the real answer? What are the options going forward? And be open to things that he might traditionally not be open to.
Do you think the coaching staff looks the same? Or are there a couple of people who are kind of on the fence right now?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do defensively. He's talked, given Nick Sorensen a vote of confidence, but I don't think anyone would express a lot of, admiration for the 49ers defense or their scheme this year. That said, Kyle likes to keep it pretty, tight and limited and be simple on the defensive end. So I'm not sure if they will move on from Sorensen. I do think that if Jeff Ulbrich, a guy that they kind of wanted last offseason, if he's available, you might just say, all right, well, he's a guy who's proven. We're going to go with him over Sorensen, and maybe you go that way. But I do think they're going to need to add some more young talent. I think in years past, that's been one of Kyle's strengths. And this year, I'm not sure that they had that, where they added a lot of good young coaches this year. I'm not sure I've seen that. And I'm not sure that there's been a real boost in the coaching ranks. So That's something that will be interesting to see how they handle this offseason.
Jake, great work this season, and I know we're not done yet, and maybe the offseason's going to be even a bigger deal than the regular season, but thanks for all your work, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Hey, appreciate you, fella. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there it is. Jake Hutchinson, our man on the Niners beat. And just talking to him and the line of questioning that we just threw out there, almost all of it was about how would you change this and how would you change that? And is this guy going to be back? And is that guy going to be back? And who's available out there? I just had a moment because this was such a game that was circled on everyone's calendar the second that the schedule came out. And the fact that we're sitting here right now on the second to last night of 2024, going into a Lions-Niners game where Lions fans and Niners fans are literally having drinks together, just chatting, because they're like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, it doesn't really even matter what the final score is tonight. It is bananas. I can't believe that this is the way this all went.
Yeah, when we found out that this was the second to last game on the schedule, I think a lot of us thought, oh, winner of that game might be the one seed.
Yeah.
There's a lot on the line here.
On the line.
And one team held up their end of the bargain for that.
Sure did.
But even then, with that, it does not matter if they win or lose this football game.
I know. We found a way. Although Dan Campbell refuses to believe that or hear that, he's going to go all out in this game.
I think we have sound from Dan Campbell. I think the guys in the back have it ready. Dan Campbell talking about how they want to win this game. Guys, if you haven't, fire it off. Dan Campbell wants to win this game still.
I'll make this easy for everybody. That way all the critics can jump out and start attacking. But that way you don't have to debate them anymore. We're bringing everything we got to this game, and we are playing, and I don't care what it looks like and where it's at or who's this, who's that. We're going out to play and win this game out on the West Coast. There you go.
There it is.
Sounds like Dan Campbell.
It sounds exactly like Dan Campbell. And I'll just tell you, like, this is one of those things, and I've got no criticisms for the guy. I think he's done an unbelievable job in changing the culture. Obviously, his openness to creativity. You've got the Lions out there. Jared Goff is faking falling over. And all of these plays that they're running. I think he deserves a ton of credit for everything that has gone on with the team. But, well, look, we've already watched it once, and it's funny to me how many people would be like, well, the Lions are going out there to avenge what happened last year. They're not. It doesn't matter. They could win by 40 tonight, and you don't avenge anything. You still didn't go to the Super Bowl. And so I get it. I understand why everyone loves the guy. At the same time, you are, every year you go into the playoffs, you are running the risk of making the wrong call at the wrong time, and I'm not guessing because we already watched it. He has gone to the playoffs once, and he literally punted the game away to the 49ers, or should I say didn't punt enough, like he didn't kick the ball enough. And so, you know, I just don't think that you go into anything in life with only one pitch. And Dan's got one pitch. It's a great pitch. But if somebody hits it out of the park, you lose, brother.
I know this isn't a Campbell versus Shanahan conversation, but I would also say I feel like Shanahan goes into situations like that with one pitch. His one pitch is the exact other extreme.
Interesting.
And it is ultra-conservative. Not taking risks. And it is punting or kicking, trying a 50-yard field goal when your kicker is kind of iffy instead of going for it on 4th-and-2.
No, that's all fair. It's a fair criticism. I do think he's gone for it on 4th down a lot more this year in certain spots. These things are always easy to sort of, like, hindsight being 2020. I hear you. I would love to, for Kyle to loosen it up at times, and he clearly needs to make adjustments. But specifically come playoff time, I really wonder what Dan's got for us this year.
Same thing as last year.
And he's got a defense that is very compromised, and they're going to be going against very high-powered offenses. Like the Lions, if they do get that one seed, really good chance that the first team they see come to town is like a Commanders or a Vikings or a Packers or something like that. It's going to be somebody who can come in and sling it. And
seems like even more reason to go for it on 4th down.
Maybe.
To keep the ball away from the opposing offense and to put more points on the board.
Maybe. unless it doesn't. And so, again, I know everybody's allergic to field goals. They would have put the Lions in the Super Bowl last year
if
they had kicked them. You know? All right, we're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. If you got anything to say Lions and Niners related, let's do it. 888-957-9570. We'll also start to transition back to Golden State Warriors basketball. The Kuminga question, how to finish the puzzle for the Warriors as they get ready with the Cavs in town tonight, a game that you'll hear right here. Grandy is in for Dibs. It's Willard and Dibs.